Chapter 39. Naomi. She didn't have days. Hours, maybe. For all she knew, minutes. And the plan still had holes in it. She sat in the mess, hunched over a bowl of bread pudding. People passed through from the crew quarters, some wearing Martian uniforms, some their normal clothes, a few in a new Free Navy uniform. But the other table stayed empty, apart from her and Sin. Before, she'd been almost crew. Now, she was a prisoner. And as a prisoner, her schedule had changed. She'd eat when other people weren't eating. She'd exercise when other people weren't exercising. She'd sleep in the dark, with her door locked from the outside. She was grateful for it. She needed the quiet of her own mind now. And strangely, she felt comfortable there. Something had happened in the last days. She couldn't put her finger on when or how, but the dark thoughts had either vanished or else grown so vast she couldn't see their horizons. She didn't think she was crazy. She had felt her mind fishtailing out from under her one time and another in her life, and this was very different. She understood she might die, that Jim might die, that Marco might sail from success to success, that Philip might never forgive or even understand her. And she could tell that all of those facts mattered to her, and mattered deeply. But they didn't overwhelm her, not anymore. The umbilical linking the ships was 50 meters at full extension, not even as wide as a soccer field. The link between the ships was between the cargo-level airlocks, where it was easier to access engineering and move supplies, which left the crew-level airlocks unused. There were EVA suits in the lockers there. With a strip of welding tape or a crowbar, she could get one in only a couple of minutes. Get into the suit, out the Pella's airlock, force the airlock on the Chetsmoka, all in the time between the drives cutting off and the Chetsmoka firing her maneuvering thrusters. There were no calculations for it. It would be very, very close, but she thought it was possible. And since it was possible, it was necessary. There were problems, of course, that needed solving. For one thing, she didn't have welding tape or a crowbar, and with her escorts now treating her as untrustworthy, her opportunity to steal either while running an inventory was gone. Second, once Marco saw she'd taken an EVA suit and made the jump, she had no way to keep him from firing a missile at the Chetsmoka. Or worse, finding some way to disable the proximity trap and come back for her. If she could get a suit on the sly, though, so that the inventory said they still had a full complement, they might think she'd killed herself. If she was dead, she posed no threat. She knew the inventory system well enough. She thought she could force an update. She knew she could, given enough time and access. But she only had hours. Maybe hours. Maybe less. A familiar, sharp voice came from the screen where a news feed was still playing to the empty room. Secretary General Gao was more than a leader of my government. She was also a close personal friend, and I will miss her company deeply. Avasarala's expression was careful, composed. Even through the screen and a couple 100,000 kilometers, she radiated certainty and calm. Naomi knew it might all be an act, but if it was, it was a good act. The reporter was a young man with close-cut dark hair, who leaned forward and tried to look up to the task of interviewing her. The other casualties of the war have... No, Avasarala said. Not war. Not casualties. These aren't casualties. They're murders. This isn't a war. Marco Inaros can claim to be an admiral in command of a great navy if he wants. I can claim to be the effing Buddha. That doesn't make it true. He's a criminal with a lot of stolen ships and more innocent blood on his hands than anyone in history. He's a monstrous little boy. Naomi took another bite of bread pudding. Whatever they used to make the raisins wasn't convincing, but it didn't taste bad. For a moment, her thoughts weren't on welding tape and inventory cheats. So you don't consider this an act of war? War by who? War is a conflict between governments, yes? What sort of government does he represent? When was he elected? Who appointed him? Now, after the fact, he's scrambling to say he represents Belters. So what? Any petty thug in his position would want to call it war because it makes him sound serious. The reporter looked like he'd swallowed something sour and unexpected. I'm sorry, are you saying this attack isn't serious?
This attack is the greatest tragedy in human history, Avasarala said, her voice deep and throbbing. She dominated the screen. But it was carried out by short-sighted, narcissistic criminals. They want a war? Too bad. They get an arrest, processing, and a fair trial with whatever lawyer they can afford. They want the Belt to rise up so they can hide behind the good, decent people who live there. Belters aren't thugs, and they aren't murderers. They are men and women who love their children the same as any of us. They are good and evil and wise and foolish and human. And this free navy will never be able to kill enough people to make Earth forget that shared humanity. Let the Belt consult its own conscience, and you'll see compassion and decency and kindness flourish in any gravity, or none. Earth has been bloodied, but we will not be debased. Not on my fucking watch. The old woman sat back in her seat, her eyes fiery and defiant. The reporter glanced into the camera and then back to his notes. The relief effort on Earth is, of course, a massive undertaking. It is, she said. We have reactors in every major city on the planet running at top efficiency to provide power for... The screen went blank. Sin put his hand terminal down on the table with an angry click. Naomi looked up at him from behind her hair.
Esa bitch needs a Utah cut, Sin said.
His face was dark with rage.
Listen, I told us like her, yeah?
For, Naomi said, shrugging. Kill her and another one will take her place. She's good at what she does. But even if you did slit her throat, there'd just be someone else in the same chair saying the same things.
Sin shook his head. Not like that.
Close by.
No,
he said, his chin jutting a centimeter forward.
Not like that. Alisla about big social movements, the ages of history, Isa. Stories they make up later so it makes sense. Not like that. Not real. It's people do things. Marco, Filipito, you, me.
You say so, Naomi said.
It's that Koyo on Mars who traded us for all the ships and told us where to find supplies. He's not Martian economic despair, or rising debt ratios, or income and access inequality.
With each pretentious invented term, Sin wagged his finger like a professor lecturing a class, and it was funny enough that Naomi chuckled. He blinked at the sound, and then smiled a little shyly.
La Koyo la. It's just some Koyo. He's a man, made a deal with a man who talked up some utras and we did things. Who people are, it matters, yeah? Can't replace them.
His gaze was on her now. Not a professor lecturing a class, but Sin lecturing her. She scooped the last bite of pudding into her mouth.
Get the feeling you're saying something, she said around it.
Sin looked down, gathered himself. She could see the effort more than she could understand it.
Filipito, he needs you. No sabes la, but he does. You and Marco are you and Marco, but no you take the cowards out.
Her heart jumped a little. He thought she was in despair, that she might give in to the dark thoughts. She wondered what brought him to that conclusion, and whether it was a mistake he was making or something he could see in her that she couldn't. She swallowed.
You telling me not to kill myself?
Be a bad thing to say?
She stood up, her soiled bowl in her hand. He rose with her, following as she headed for the recycler. The weight of her body was reassuring. There was still time. They hadn't cut the drives yet. She could still figure her way over.
What should I do then?
It was Sin's turn to shrug.
Come with. Be free, Navy. We go where they need us. Do what needs doing. Help where they need help, yeah? Already 8 colony ships on target.
Target for what?
Redistribuer, yeah? Alisla food and supplies they got heading out for the ring. Massa anyone ever gave the Belt. Take that, feed the Belt, build the Belt. See what they suvide when they're not scrabbling for airy ejection mass. Gardens in the vacuum. Cities make Tycho Station look some rockhopper's head. New world without a world to it, yeah? None of this alien buck. Blow the ring. Burn it. Get back to people being people, yeah?
Two women walked by, heads bent toward each other in passionate conversation. The nearer one glanced up, then away, then back. There was venom in her gaze. Hatred. The contrast was stark. On one hand, Sin's vision of a future where Belters were free of the economic oppression of the inner planets, of the central axioms that had formed everything in Naomi's childhood, in her life. Civilization built by them and for them. A remaking of human life. And on the other, actual Belters actually hating her because she had dared to act against them. Because she wasn't Belter enough. Where does it end, Sin? Where does it all end?
Doesn't. Not if we do it right.
There was nothing in her cabin that could help her, but since she was confined there and alone, it was where she searched. Hours, not days. The crash couch was bolted to the deck with thick steel and reinforced ceramic, canted so that any direction the force came from was compression on one leg or another. Any individual strut might have been usable as a pry bar, but she didn't have any way to unbolt the couch or break one free. So not that. The drawers were thinner metal, the same gauge more or less as the lockers. She pulled them out as far as they would open, examining the construction of the latches, the seams where the metal had been folded, searching for clues or inspiration. There was nothing. The tiny black thumb of the decompression kit she kept tucked at her waist, ready to go if she could just find a way. She felt the time slipping away, second by second, as she came up blank. She had to find a way. She would find a way. The Chetsmoker was so close to still be too far away. If she didn't try to go when they pulled the umbilical, if she could sneak across now and hide there until they separated, if she could get to the armory instead, and maybe find a demolition mech that could act as an environment suit, or that she could use to cut through the bulkheads fast enough that no one shot her in the back of the head. Think, she said. Don't spin and whine, think. But nothing came. When she slept, it was for thin slips of minutes. She couldn't afford a deep sleep for fear of waking to find the Chetsmoker gone. And she lay on the ground, with her hand clutching the base of the crash couch so that it would tug her awake if they went on the float. What would Alex do? What would Amos do? What would Jim do? What would she do? Nothing came to her. She waited for despair, the darkness, the sense of overwhelming failure, and didn't understand why it didn't come. There was every reason to be devastated, but she wasn't. Instead, there was only the certainty that if the dark thoughts did return, they would come in such strength that she wouldn't stand a chance against them. Oddly, even that was comforting. When she knocked to go to the head, Sarta opened the door. Not that it mattered. She followed Naomi down the hall, then waited outside. The head didn't have anything of use either, but Naomi took her time in case inspiration came. The mirror was polished alloy built into the wall. No help there. If she could take apart the vacuum fans and the toilet. She heard voices from the other side of the door, Sarta and someone else. The words were too soft to make out. She finished washing her hands, dropped the towelette in the recycler, and stepped into the corridor. Philip looked over at her. It was her son, and she hadn't recognized his voice. Philip, she said. Sin said you wanted to talk to me. Philip said, landing the words equally as question and accusation. Did he now? That was kind of him. She hesitated. Her hands itched with the need to find some way to put her hands on an EVA suit, but something in the back of her mind whispered, if they think you're alive, they'll come for you. Anger and diffidence made the planes and angles of Philip's face. Sin already thought she was bent on self-slaughter. It was why he'd sent Philip. Her belly went heavy almost before she understood why. If Philip thought it too, if when she went missing her son went to Marco and stood witness to her suicidal bent, it would be easier to believe. They might not even check to see if a suit was missing. Do you want to talk here in the hallway? She said, her lips heavy, her mouth slow. I have a little place nearby. Not spacious, but there's some privacy. Philip nodded once, and Naomi turned down the hall, Sarta and Philip following her. She rehearsed lines in her mind. I'm so tired that I just want it to be over. And what I do to myself isn't your fault, and I can't take it anymore. There were 1,000 ways to convince him that she was ready to die. But beneath those, the heaviness in her gut thickened and settled. The manipulation was cruel, and it was cold. It was her own child, the child she'd lost, and she was going to use him. Lie to him so well that what he told Marco would be indistinguishable from truth, so that when she disappeared to the Chetsmoka, they would assume she'd killed herself and not come after her. Not until it was too late. She could do it. She couldn't do it. She could. In the cabin, she sat on the couch, her legs folded up under her. He leaned against the wall, his mouth tight, his chin high. She wondered what he was thinking, what he wanted and feared and loved. She wondered if anyone had ever asked him. I can't take it anymore, she thought. Just say, I can't take it anymore. Are you all right? She asked. Why wouldn't I be? I don't know, she said. I worry about you. Not so much you wouldn't betray me, he said. And that untied the knot. Yes, if she lied to him, it would be betraying him. And for all her failures, she'd never done that. She could. She could do it. It wasn't that she was powerless before the decision. It was that she chose not to. The warning I sent? I have dedicated my life to the Belt, to freeing the Belters. And after we did everything we could to keep you safe, you spat in our faces. Do you love your Earther boyfriend that much more than your own kind? Is that it? Naomi nodded. It was like hearing all the things Marco was too polished to say out loud. There was real feeling behind them in a way she would never hear from Marco. Maybe never had. He'd soaked up all his father's lines, only where Marco's soul was safe and unreachable in its deep, self-centered cyst, Philip was still raw. The pain that she had not only left him, but left him for a man from Earth, lit his eyes. Betrayal wasn't too strong a word. My own kind, she said. Let me tell you about my own kind. There are 2 sides in this, but they aren't inner planets and outer ones, Belters and everyone else. It's not like that. It's the people who want more violence and the ones who want less. And no matter what other variable you sample out of, you'll find some of both. I was harsh to you the day the rocks dropped, but I meant everything I said. Your father and I are now and always were on different sides. We will never, ever be reconciled. But I think, despite everything, you can still choose whichever side you'd like. Even now, when it seems like you've done something that can't be redeemed, you can choose what it means to you. This is shit, he said. You're shit. You're an earth-fucking whore and always have been. You're a camp follower, looking to sleep your way into anybody's bed who seems important. Your whole life's that. You're nothing. She folded her hands. Everything he said was so wrong it didn't even sting. It was like he was calling her a terrier. All she could think of it was, these are the last words you're going to say to your mother. You will regret them for the rest of your life. Philip turned, pulled open the door. You deserved better parents, she said, as he slammed it behind him. She didn't know if he'd heard.